up here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting men for the dying peace. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far darkness. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far-dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European Heartland. Well, this is brought to my attention by James Edwards. It's kind of a sad retreat. Chick-fil-A, the big U.S. Company that's very proudly Christian, and has stood up to all sorts of harassment by the LGBTQ community because it, quite frankly, is opposed to the LGBTQ agenda and says so, which last time I looked was its perfect right. Anyway, Chick-fil-A has cut ties with cut charity ties with anti-LGBTQ groups. Chick-fil-A announced yesterday to finally confront accusations that the fast food chain is hostile to the LGBTQ community. And this is according to the New York Post. here we are. The company revealed that it would no longer donate to the Salvation Army, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and other groups that are being criticized for their stances on LGBTQ issues. Isn't that a pathetic retreat? They will no longer donate to the Salvation Army, which does so much great charity work, among other things. Instead, Chick-fil-A said it will only give to charities involved in education, homelessness, and hunger, with $9 million assigned to each grouping, according to Business Insider. When there is a tension, we want to make sure we're being clear. We think it's good to be helpful, Chick-fil-A President and Chief Operating Officer Tim Tassopoulos told BizNow. It's just the right thing to do, to be clear, caring, and supportive, and do it in the community. Yeah, but, Another Chick-fil-A executive told BizNow that the company had spent too many years taking it on the chin and ignoring protests and boycotts, but the escalating backlash was finally too much to ignore. DeSalpa said the company wanted to narrow its focus on the three charitable areas to be clear about who we are. There are lots of articles and newscasts about Chick-fil-A, and we thought we needed to be clear about the message. The firm was focusing on education, hunger, and homelessness because they are critical issues in communities across the United States. Interesting. This is why you wonder, why give in? Despite the backlash that's largely agitated by Christian haters and the LGBTQ crowd, Chick-fil-A was named America's favorite restaurant in June based on customer satisfaction for the fourth year running. So why retreat? Why give in? James Edwards he's a broadcaster, longtime friend of mine. He is has a weekly program Saturday night on the in Memphis, Tennessee, called The Political Cesspool. And James says, big mistake. Appeasement never works. Chick-fil-A will now have to give money to homosexual organizations and host drag queen story time in its restaurants. If not, the boycotts and protests will continue. And he's quite right. In fact, almost immediately, a LGBTQ organization said, well, they weren't satisfied yet. They wanted guarantees that LGBTQ employees are safe, are cherished, blah, 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 blah. It's never enough. James Edwards' warning was absolutely correct. Here's another pathetic story. German city declares Nazi emergency amid rise of far right. Amid the festive celebrations this month marking the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, this German city, Dresden, in eastern Germany, has delivered a jolting reminder of the much darker period in the country's past. During the commemoration of the country's 1989 reunification, days before the country's commemoration of its reunification in 1989, before they began, municipal council declared a Nazi emergency in Dresden, a city that in recent years has become synonymous with the resurgence of Germany's far right. Councillor Max Aschenbach said he introduced the motion, which passed 39-29 in a vote, hoping it would draw attention to the scope of Dresden's problems with extremists and embarrass Chancellor Angela Merkel into taking action. Oh, what do you mean? Further action against suppressing free speech? Dresden is the birthplace of Pegida, an Islamophobic movement that has spawned branches in several Western countries, including Canada. Islamophobic means they don't want their country invaded. Not the same thing as being phobic about something. The group holds biweekly marches through the center of this otherwise quiet city on the Elbe River, with thousands of people chanting against the presence of refugees from the Middle East and what Pegida says is the rising influence of Islam in both Germany and Europe. It is, numbers are everything. When you have anything approaching a majority, you're going to be calling the shots. In September elections, the anti-immigrant alternative for Germany, known as by its German acronym AfD or AfD, Alternative for Deutschland, surged to become the second largest party in the regional parliament of Saxony, the state of which Dresden is the capital. Political analysts say the AfD, which captured 27.5% of the popular vote in the Saxony election, compared with 12.5% in the 2017 federal election, is an outgrowth of Pegida, one that uses slightly less extreme rhetoric to attract a broader base of supporters. The result in Saxony was stunning, given the AfD came into existence just 6 years ago. In the last couple of years, we've seen the right gaining power, not only in the local parliament, but in society as a whole. The AfD is a fascist and racist party. That there must be something going wrong for so many people to stay away from democracy, Mr. Aschenbach said. But he's a nut. The AfD is not a fascist party. They're a democratic party. And so Mr. Aschenbach's belief is that if you don't vote for the parties he likes, if you vote for, maintaining your country against an invasion, well, you're a racist, fascist party. How much more of this can we stand? This is from today's Golden Mail. Quote, the whole political discourse is shifting to the right now, and what you are allowed to say and not allowed to say is different from before. Well, what he means is there's a slightly more free speech, although I find that hard to believe, than there has been in the past. People are speaking out a little bit more, but this is a battle for Germany's very survival. Pegidus' arguments are based on disinformation and alarmism. that's the helpful one. Editorializing of the authors of this piece. Dresden's aging population of 550,000 remains more than 90% ethnically German, and the city's character has hardly been changed by the presence of about 2,000 registered Syrian refugees living in centers on the outskirts of the city. Dresden was a city that was absolutely nuked, the Holocaust in the correct sense of the word, burnt virtually to the ground in horrible bombings on February 12th and 13th of 1945. It was an entirely civilian target. A little further in the article, the new right only talks about victimhood. They're telling society, you've been victims your whole life. They're telling people, we, the new right, will avenge you. Frank Richter, an expert on far-right movement, said, the new right is aiming at the deepest, most sensitive feelings of the people here, and that's why they've been so successful. They tell people, you are German, and this is one thing nobody can take away from you. There have been, though, members of the German Green Party that have actually held up signs in English and German, Bomber Harris, do it again. I mean, can you believe it? Anything so mad? But do it again. Like, exterminate, well, it's now believed probably in the neighborhood of 300,000 civilians were murdered in those that day and a night of bombing. Others in Dresden, including the local leader of Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, worried the city council's declaration could damage the city's reputation and its tourist industry. Herbert Wagner, a well-respected former mayor, said that while Dresden and Saxony have a right-wing problem, calling it a Nazi emergency exaggerated the scale of it. Well, not only exaggerated, it just misnamed it. And the comments by the critic Wagner are rather interesting in that what the nationalist movement is quite rightly pointing to for Germans is that they've been victimized. They've been victimized by their absolutely soul-rotten establishment led by Angela Merkel, but not only Angela Merkel, which has welcomed this population-changing immigration flood, this demography-changing, where German, if it continues, and then that is an if, but if it does, Germans could be a minority in 50 years. And just in case you say, that's a long way. Hey, I remember 1967, that's 52 years ago, Canada's centennial, its 100th anniversary, the tremendous confidence and so on.
overwhelmingly European population. We kind of melted together, got it together. We were a nation on the move. Now, little did most of us at that time know that the plotters had already begun to seal our fate. 2 years before, they had changed our flag, replacing the flag that was very much celebrated our European, British, French heritage with a what looks like an insurance logo flag. That means doesn't mean anything at all. They had begun move toward legislation which would restrict free speech. In 65, there'd been the committee hearings, special committee looking into hate propaganda. And, of course, that was the year our immigration policies had begun to change, favoring now the Third World over our traditional sources of immigration. Now, that's 52 years ago. Well, look at Canada today. Markedly less free, despite Pierre Trudeau's so-called Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Two of our major cities are now minority white, or majority Third World, Toronto and Vancouver. And unless the numbers are massively reduced and the makeup of that immigration has changed, the European founding settler people of Canada will be a minority by 2050. That's not 52 years away. That's 31. Things unstopped, certain trends will massively change the country. Well, I always love people with a sense of humor. And one group of people, well, our own cultural Marxists have no sense of humor, but another group of people that have no sense of humor are the communist Chinese. They don't like comedy shows very much. And here for once is somebody that's actually pushing back. Very good thing. South Park creators issue a mock apology over Chinese censorship. We love money more than freedom. And they say this mockingly. I kind of like this story. Last week, this actually is a story from October the 9th, so we're talking about the first week of October. The latest episode of South Park took aim at Hollywood and the NBA, that's the National Basketball Association, for cowing to Chinese censorship. Just days later, the theme proved prophetic. After an NBA executive's tweet supporting Hong Kong protesters prompted harsh Chinese reaction and quick backtracking by the league. Yeah, there's just a bunch of sniveling, just soul empty cowards. But viewers in China may not get to see the Comedy Central show's take on the issue, as South Park has reportedly been censored in the communist ruled nation, prompting creators Matt Stone and Trey Martin to issue a mock apology on Sunday that took another shot at the NBA and China. They said, like the NBA, we welcome the Chinese censors into our homes and into our hearts, the duo wrote in a statement on Twitter. We too love money more than freedom and democracy. Now, they are being sarcastic, thank heavens. Unfortunately, the reality for many of the companies dealing with China is exactly what the two creators of South Park, Matt Stone and Trey Martin, have said. The criticism comes amid a wave of Hollywood films adjusting to the whims of Chinese censorship, and during the annual journey NBA teams make to China to grow the league's foreign fan base. Filmmakers have worked hard to appease Chinese censors and appeal to its audiences in recent years, in order to rake in millions at the nation's box offices. The women-led Ghostbusters remake in 2016 tried to slip past the ban on films that promote superstitions or cults by changing its translated title.
and may have walked back the LGBT identity of Kate McKinnon's character, Vanity Fair reporter. But Chinese officials blocked the film's release anyway.
Isn't it interesting that glorifying a lesbian is still a little bit off-putting in Red China? Well, actually, it should be off-putting here too, but Hollyweird is so given over itself to degeneracy.
That same year, Zootopia replaced a moose with a panda just for the film's Chinese launch. Earlier this year, filmmakers clipped nearly 3 minutes of footage from the Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody to remove all references to Freddie Mercury's sexuality. He was a homosexual, you see. Further on in the article, there's a quotation here from a producer. For this movie to really make money, we need to clear the Chinese censors. You got to lower your ideals of freedom if you want to do business in China. He adds, punctuating the joke with an obscene metaphor. In a scene at the beginning of the episode, several NBA players, including one wearing a Houston Rockets jersey and recognizable Disney cartoons from Elsa of Frozen to Thor of the Avengers, they fly to China as brand ambassadors to entice Chinese viewers to tune in to their American programming. Randy goes to extreme lengths to satisfy the Chinese officials and regain his freedom, eventually strangling Winnie the Pooh. This is actually, I believe, in the South Side spoof. Another victim of the country's suppression of speech. His son rejects the censor's demands, boldly proclaiming that he cannot sell his soul to make money in the Chinese film market. It's not worth living in a world where China controls my country's arts, Stan eventually tells the producer as he abandons the biopic. This is one of the problems of signaling your own cowardice. As with the Chick-fil-A issue, the demands don't end. In fact, trying to buy off the anti-Christian, decency critics by abandoning supporting Christian organizations doesn't win you any cred, actually. Sensing weakness, sensing vulnerability, the hyenas move in for the kill, or move in for further demands. It's like an old legend. I don't know if this goes back to Rudyard Kipling's stories, but it could well do, about trying to feed the buy off the crocodile. A crocodile threatens a person and says it wants it wants your toe. It's his toe. So reluctantly, the potential victim allows the crocodile to bite off the toe. Does the crocodile swim away satisfied and leave the poor person alone, try to cross this river or lake, as I recall the story? Well, no. Now the crocodile wants the foot. Very reluctantly, the poor person trying to cross lets the crocodile munch off the foot. Is the crocodile now satisfied? Well, no. Now it wants the lower part of the leg. And then the thumb, well, you get the picture. The only answer, as James Edwards says, in terms of giving in to the LGBTQ crowd, is absolutely no surrender. No retreat, no apology, no surrender. It's only when you start surrendering that they begin to feel their Cheerios and move in for the kill. Here's a very interesting article from last week's National Post. The cancel culture, we've seen a lot of that in Canada and the United States, when ideology trumps inquiry. What's behind cancel culture on campus? She asks. A shift in the university's sense of its mission. The mission of free inquiry that has been sublimated to the mission of social justice. And this is the scary thing about many universities. They're no longer dedicated to the pursuit of knowledge, the debate clarification of ideas, and then the dissemination of this knowledge. No, the new goal is social justice. For many decades, Yale University said that its purpose was, quote, to create, preserve, and disseminate knowledge. Sounds good. Then in 2016, Yale's president announced a new mission, which no longer mentions knowledge. Instead, Yale is officially, quote, committed to improving the world. That's pretty broad, isn't it? Improving the world. Well, presumably, it could improve the world by doing what university normally did, which was to explore knowledge, debate ideas, and disseminate knowledge. And we do that, it was going to improve the world by educating aspiring leaders not only through research as in the past, but through practice, whatever that means. Barbara Kay then goes ahead and asks, what does that loaded word practice signify? It signifies ideology over inquiry, activism over erudition, illiberalism in the name of equity over intellectual freedom, all of which leads to the cancel culture. From a cornucopia of options, I, and this is Barbara Kay, have chosen three Canadian examples of cancel culture that struck me as especially unsettling in their implications. Liberal Arts College is a small independent college embedded within Concordia University in Montreal. In May, the administration canceled a slated graduation keynote address by political philosopher Harvey Mansfield, author of the book Manliness, and professor of government at Harvard University, where he has worked since 1962. Liberal Arts College has for 40 years been a bastion of classical liberal values, committed to free inquiry with a core curriculum based in the great canon of Western civilization. It is one of the few colleges in Canada where political correctness is consciously and conscientiously opposed, and where the free exchange of ideas is a pillar of its mission. Retired founder and longtime Liberal Arts College principal Fred Krantz, said in an interview about the cancellation that he had believed Liberal Arts College was immune to the wave of politically correct ideology sweeping many North American campuses. Yet, a handful of alumni expressing their opposition to Mansfield because of his feminism critical views, which were not in any way going to be the subject of his address, was enough to get the new president to renege on the invitation. And this is in a good college. It's pathetic. So, this is Barbara Kay continuing her commentary. So my feeling about this particular incident was of a special discouragement. The protesting alumni hadn't been indoctrinated or cowed into submission by social justice warriors at Berkeley. They were graduates of a program dedicated to free academic inquiry. Yet their solid education in the classical liberal tradition was no prophylactic against an illiberal zeitgeist. Cancel culture can, it seems, be taken in by osmosis. My second, this is Barbara Kay's commentary, my second example is the University of Victoria,
Actually, that's where I am tonight, in Victoria, British Columbia. We're going to be having a free speech meeting in about an hour and a half. My second example is the University of Victoria's recent decision to not renew the contract of adjunct professor Susan Crockford, a zoologist with an expertise in polar bears. Crockford was also a University of Victoria Speakers Bureau on the University of Victoria Speakers Bureau list, and would regularly give talks to schools and community groups, but was removed from that role as well. What was her crime? Apparently, wrong think on climate change. Crockford shattered a popular climate change myth by reporting the polar bears, the polar bear populations are not plummeting as a result of shrinking Arctic ice. In fact, polar bear numbers are stable and even rising. The polar bears are there, masses of them, and in fact, the federal government, if you've noticed, has stopped publicly grieving about their disappearance, because the Eskimos gave them an earful on that subject. They were angry that their own testimony, that's the Eskimos, they're the ones who actually live with the polar bears, was being ignored. No, the polar bears are not disappearing. And contrary to the nonsense put out in 2000 by then Vice President Al Gore, that the Arctic ice cap was melting rapidly and would be gone by 2013. No, it's not happening. It's not gone. But these crackpots who preach, as our Canada's Green Party leader, Elizabeth May, says, it's science, not politics. Actually, it isn't science. The science that they're quoting is largely bullshit. They don't have science behind them. But they pretend they do. But they're not called on it. Al Gore still makes buckets full of money going around giving speeches. People with big pockets are prepared to hear him. But here's a guy who really ought to be called on what he said. You predicted, the Arctic ice cap was going to melt. It didn't. You really shouldn't be treated as some sort of wise guru. You're not.
Okay, back to Professor Susan Crockford, who has spoken heresy by not going along with the party line. The sky is falling. Well, actually, the sky isn't falling. It's the Arctic ice cap is melting because of climate change. Well, actually, remember just a few years ago it was global warming. But now there's not a lot of evidence that the world is warming. So it's climate change. Well, we can't lose on that one, can you? So Crockford was not disseminating false news, but reporting actual news that didn't reinforce the received wisdom of climate change, which is why I found the polar bear story especially disturbing. This is, again, Barbara Kay commenting.
It's one thing to fire a teacher who promotes theories or hypotheses the university disagrees with, though that would be wrong as well. This isn't the case with Crockford's non-renewal. After all, polar bear numbers have nothing to do with racism, sexism, or transphobia, the usual grounds for cancel culture. My final example arises from my participation, this is Barbara Kay's participation, in the 2015 McDonnell Laurier Institute's Great Canadian Debate Series. The resolution was free speech in Canadian universities is an endangered species. I naturally took the affirmative side, and my opponent was Daniel Drache, a York University political science of the York University Political Science Department. He was an extreme radical when I was in university at the University of Toronto, so I remember Danny Drache, Jew. What he has to say was, I believe, representative of the progressive mindset. He began by asking the question, does every crackpot, eccentric, provocateur, or bona fide activist have a right to speak on campus? Drache sincerely believes that the people who have been deplatformed are not only small numerically, about 23 a year, he says, out of about 2,000 invited speakers each year across Canada, that's universities, I guess,
but also that most of them hold views that are so dumb or outrageous or offensive or dangerous that their deplatforming is an insignificant price to pay for the racial and gender diversity the modern university can boast of. So in order to cater to racial minorities and gender diversity, that used to be men and women, didn't it? No. All sorts of diversities today. Surprisingly, a few speakers is a small price to pay. That's what Danny Grace thinks. He said that for those who are eager to hear these crackpots and eccentrics, they can find them on the internet. Well, not if other censors get their way. Of course, let's not forget that the attack on free speech is on many fronts. It isn't just speaking on university campuses or even being able to teach at a university. This is Barbara Kay continuing. For my part, I made all the points you would expect from someone defending freedom of speech. But afterward, when we were socializing at a reception, Dresch told me that there was only one argument I'd made to which he felt vulnerable as a progressive. It was my comment following my observation that in 2013, a free speech wall built by Students for Liberty at Queen's University had been removed on the grounds of offensive content. A free speech wall removed because of offensive content. But it was about free speech. I had said, free speech wall, ominous doublespeak. Free speech walls emerged in authoritarian societies like China because there was no free speech and citizens quite reasonably feared speaking truth to power. There is an entire generation of Canadian students who think a free speech wall, one tiny corner of the campus approved for anonymously written incorrect thoughts, is something they should be grateful for. Well, this is pathetic. A free speech wall is, in fact, tangible proof of the problem. It saddens me and scares me more than a little, too. Well, I said that in 2014. Have things got better since? Well, not much. Not so as you'd notice. The theme of my talk in Victoria tonight, and I'll be doing the same talk in a number of other Western cities, and in the new year in a number of cities back east, it is the battle for free speech. And our challenge is that there are increasing numbers of Canadians, especially those in leadership positions, who just don't get it. And those of us who believe in free speech are going to have as our mission efforts to try to make them get it, to understand. And more than to understand, to cherish. Free speech, it should be a value that they're prepared to go to the mat for. But we see all too often in corporate Canada and universities, far from being prepared to go to the mat to defend free speech, administrators or corporate executives are only too happy to squelch free speech. Last week, we saw the disgusting treatment of longtime hockey icon, 37-year broadcaster, coach's corner on Hockey Night in Canada, Don Cherry. He was bounced. He was bounced because he made mildly critical comments of some immigrants. What he was trying to get across was, you ought to be grateful for being in this country. You enjoy our freedoms, our milk and honey. You should be prepared to spend a few bucks and buy a poppy to commemorate the soldiers who fought for Canada. Oh, well, he'd singled out immigrants. His comments were offensive. First of all, they were said as part of a much larger broadcast. They were extemporaneous, and they were presenting a point of view. Don Cherry would admit, as would I, and from my own observation, that there are many immigrants who do wear the poppy, but there are many who do not.
And a casual observer in Mississauga, where Don Cherry lives, which is over 50% non-white, and Toronto, which is similarly 50% non-white, is that many of these non-white immigrants do not wear the poppy. Either they don't know about this tradition, in which case they must have been brain dead for a long time, or just totally not plugged in, or they don't care. Well, I don't want to attribute a feeling that they don't care. He made a comment. Is that the end of the discussion? Of course not. Should other people get in on the debate? Yeah, absolutely. But the price for that one comment, after a 37-year career, in which he had brought all sorts of support and audience to Hockey Night in Canada, which of course makes a lot of money for the NHL and others. After all of this, they couldn't get rid of him fast enough. And I think this really hurt. He was really making his comments about the veterans. And the organization that represents the veterans, the answer is the Royal Canadian Legion, tossed him under the bus, saying, you know, he didn't represent their values of inclusion and so on. Disgusting. You know, this is the sort of thing that we have to try to oppose and deal with. We've got a big battle going to get people to understand the importance of free speech. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to play a tune that goes back a little over 10 years. Merle Haggard, the late Merle Haggard. I love the sentiment of this, and I think it's really very apropos. And this tune is called America First. By Merle Haggard, and hope you like it. I've been playing this for a number of years. Merle Haggard, America First. Once we get to suppress this stupid ad. Merle Haggard, America First.
States, we're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year, coast to coast.
America First. I'm going to play another one that you might like. Kind of a similar theme. It's with Gretchen Wilson.
Get total Wi-Fi control. Now
that's not Gretchen Wilson. It's Gretchen Wilson. And it's called Politically Uncorrect. Now, I'm not sure if there's actually a word called politically uncorrect, but that's what she calls it. It's usually called politically incorrect. She gets a little bit of assist with this song by the last mentioned, Merle Haggard. Politically Uncorrect.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas. That's the family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
They're concerned about the violence and the death.
Seems like I have, less money to spend
on another deadly day in Iraq as 11 U.S. soldiers.
It is a free country.
I'm for the love man on the totem. Still pulling third shift, and the single mom raising her kids. And I'm for the preachers who stay on their knees. And I'm for the sinner who finally believes. And I'm for the farmer with dirt on his hands. And the soldiers who fight for this land.
Wilson and Earl Haggard, Politically Uncorrect. celebrating pride in who you are. Here's Gretchen Wilson, Redneck Woman.
It's Illinois, population 850, to the heart of Midtown Manhattan, the Rockefeller Center. But that's where Gretchen Wilson is this morning. And ladies and gentlemen, here she is singing her hit, Redneck Woman.
Virtuoso.
And while we're still with Gretchen Wilson, this is another song of hers from about 10 years ago. Tears for the Party, Gretchen Wilson. This is Paul Crone.
Ringing
That's Gretchen Wilson here for the party. This is Paul Fromm. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on this fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.